Hi.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here. Donc, Steve Logren will explain to us why our Hadoop cluster or jobs get slow. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Logren. I work at Hortonworks on things. I'm a Hadoop committer and other stuff. I should warn you at this point, this is not a talk of mine. This is a talk by my colleagues, Bikas and Hitesh, who are not me, although Siri keeps on thinking I'm married to Hitesh in great conversations. Because of that, if you ask really hard questions, you'll realize I do not know what I'm talking about. That is not because I am management. It's because I work on slightly different problems. Bikas and Hitesh tend to work. Well, actually, they're both right now on the Spark team, though they also deal with Tez problems as well. And they get to deal with some of the support calls related to performance. Me, I generally get to deal with more obscure things related to Kerberos that I absolutely fear, that aren't so much the why is it slow, but why isn't Spark talking to HBase? And can you fix it in half an hour? That kind of problem. But now I'm working on S3 stuff. We launched our HD Cloud on Amazon product yesterday, and I've already got my first why is S3 slow problem. So I'm getting into performance too. That's a measure of success. If people aren't complaining that things aren't working, it means they're not using your software. Okay, remember that. A bit of a knowing grin there. So, a lot of our line of business is actually providing support for people running Hadoop clusters, and people come with questions. Why is it slow? Why is my cluster slow? A really scary one is, why has my query got slower? As it used to work, and it's got slower, and we fear that, especially on upgrades, as it can mean things like the query planner has suddenly got significantly slower, or something like that. So that's what keeps people busy, is why has it got slow problems? And very much, it's been an art. The people that helped write this code would be involved with the support teams, and we'd be sitting there trying to diagnose things and guessing and saying, oh, well, why don't you try this option, and what about this? And we have a very large number of switches in Hadoop. Has anyone noticed there are lots of configuration options? Yes, too many. And then there's actually all the machine configurations. There's a lot of ways that things can be ever so slightly out of tune, and you have to change things in parallel and stuff. And a lot of it comes down to trying to debug what's wrong with those settings. If you're wondering why we have so many settings, often they're there to actually avoid those regressions of, we've made a change and it's going to be better, but it actually turns out to make it slower for two customers, so we have to make it optional. So we've been moving away from trying to make it a kind of an art with the people that help write the code to more of a science and a process to say, if you have a performance problem, let's do this and this and this. With a lot of this stuff being open source, it's actually in everyone's interests if we can, one, we have to change the code to improve that diagnostics and see what's going on. Secondly, we push as much as we can into the open source, into environment management tools, into other stuff, so that those problems, they go away for everybody. In an ideal world, nobody has performance problems. We'd only have Kerberos problems, so only my life would be ruined. So, we work on different levels. Metrics and monitoring, trying to get logs from the applications up the stack, trying to do correlation with the other stuff, and finally, improving the analytics. So, when you look at a Hadoop cluster, it is a very large number of services across machines. If you have 1,000 machines, you've got 1,000 data nodes, 1,000 resource managers running HBase, you've now got 1,000 HBase region servers. They can all play out for different reasons. And the basic way of seeing what's going on there, an individual service, is to actually use the metrics that are collected. We have a lot of metrics in Hadoop, Hadoop Metrics API, where we're collecting, we're all collecting numerical values. We have snapshots of individual values. We have counters and graphs and gauges, that kind of thing, which measure how things are going up and down over time. Interesting enough, the layers above, and I'll call out Spark, have been using a library called the CodaHale Metrics Library. Has anyone played with that, CodaHale? It's very good. If you're adding metrics to your own application, I would look at that, and it works really well with things like closures. So you can provide your metrics, but your metrics aren't little things that count as you increment in your code. They're just callbacks that can get called from the management thing to say, give me this value, give me that value. And just anything you can generally add as a metric is really, really useful. The only caveat to that is if you add some counter that's a deep implementation value, and then you change your code and you remove that value, it may turn out that people in operations have been using that counter for something, and suddenly that thing's gone, and they're going, hey, you removed a metric I need. Anyway, machine-level metrics. What is the CPU load? So there's normal, you know, there's things like top, there's I/O top, there's net top. That's across the CPU. That tells you a machine's busy. Doesn't actually tell you which service on that machine's busy. We've got app-level metrics. HBase, sorry, you know, all the counters in the application I mentioned a moment ago. And then those are just numbers that your metric tools can grab. Say, right, give me a snapshot of all the metrics. We've got a view of the numbers. If you have the experience to understand those numbers, so you've been looking at your cluster, you can go, hey, okay, this is my garbage count frequency on my name node. This is higher than normal. And that's really good, except that you've got to learn what normal is. You've got to have that experience. You've got to spend time looking at it. And that's just, that's too much effort. So let's get away from that. And let's start actually, we'd be moving towards the notion of, okay, well, we're collecting all the metrics. Let's collect them over time. Let's just view them over time. Let's improve how we represent them. Let's start looking, you know, looking for outliers and misbehavior in this world. So that's where I've been going. In Ambari 2.0, there's a feature called Ambari Metrics Service, which has supplanted ganglia as service collections on the machines. We're grabbing for individual services rather than just those machines. It's designed to scale pretty well. The critique of it, it is not ganglia. It doesn't fit in with existing tools, which is kind of always a pain. However, it is designed to meet the problems of tracking and diagnosing problems on a very large Hadoop cluster, which is a trade-off. Ganglia just couldn't cut it anymore. And again, it's very tunable on things like how long keep the data and aggregate it. If you look at one of the big trends we're going to in this world is large Hadoop clusters generate large amounts of data. To really analyze the problems, it's a data science problem all of its own. So we stick them somewhere where we can work with lots of data. It's called a Hadoop cluster. And we analyze it with various tools for analyzing large amounts of data. Ambari 2.2, we've added something nice feature with Grafana integration, rendering the stuff. If you're running Ambari, get the metrics, hit the quick links and say Grafana, and you get a nice, pretty view of what's happening. I don't know if you can see this well against the color scheme, but we have dashboards for HBase, for Yarn, NameNode and stuff. And it's designed to provide an at-a-glance view of some of the things that's going on. Here is a view, you probably can't see it well, basically it's showing RPC queue length or something like that across different HBase region servers. And there's different colors, and one's going up and down more than the other. Now, this graph is showing different colors of different name nodes. So, okay, you've got 1,000 name nodes. That's actually quite a lot of colors. And isn't that meaningless? One of the things that's quite cute is you can just say, well, show me the top 10 values of this particular metric across my entire cluster. Ignore the rest. We don't care about the ones that are working right. We want to show the outliers. And this one says, okay, the green one is significantly worse than the others. Let's start looking there. And it just gives you a hint about maybe there's a problem on a specific machine. We can do the same. We can look at HGFS and say, okay, garbage count. Is it working? Is it not working? This is an internal cluster that's working, except we look at garbage collection count. Oh, the number's going up. Oh, the time's going up. There may be a problem. There may be a problem coming. So it's time to start worrying now before it becomes a crisis. You're saying, okay, this isn't a good sign. So one of the things that's come in here is actually having the tooling keep an eye on what's happening and look for those trends. So time series-based reporting, rather than say a threshold to say, okay, when the garbage collection count gets above this many times in a minute, tell me. It's more saying, okay, well, you work out what the mean GC count is, work out a valid range, and as soon as we start going above that value, start warning me. Same for Yarn, we're looking at job count here. We have 1.4 terabytes of memory in use across the entire cluster. That's quite a big number, but we also have something like 10 terabytes of outstanding container requests, which is actually quite a lot, given you only have 1.4 terabytes to work with. So again, we're using a cluster, it's nice and happily busy, but there's a lot of work pending to run. Anyway, so we're collecting all the stuff, we've got some nice views. Showing that top 10 there, and we're doing time series alerting. That's at the service level. That's good for the static services. It doesn't really work for queries, where you've got something that's short-lived, it ran a bit, it finished. Now you're going back to say, why was something slow yesterday? Why was our nightly ETL slow yesterday? Was something happening elsewhere on the cluster that stamped on my work? Now, we have lots of logs across the entire cluster telling you what's happening. Hands up who has spent their time staring at logs in a Hadoop cluster. Yeah, hands up who spent time staring at logs, three different logs on a Hadoop cluster trying to correlate time on one machine with what happened on the second machine. Yeah, that's my life trying to diagnose test runs or failures when I'm getting authentication problem here and you look at Zoom. You know, that is a pain we all have. One of the problems is that a lot of those logs were put in by developers trying to debug why things weren't working, emergency support calls trying to debug what's working. We try and log as much information, but the bias is towards humans. That's good as a first step, but if we're trying to actually make this more of a science, we need to start thinking about, let's publish information for the machines to collect, the machines to analyze. Two big things coming up there, audit logs and caller context. The audit logs, if you've not come across them, are special logs that come out of Yarn and HDFS and ideally other services, which are tracking big events. The audit log comes out the name node. It's just yet another log for JLogger, but you can configure it to stick stuff somewhere else. And it is special in that it is, one, designed to be parsed by machines. Two, it is considered a public part of the API where any change in the format of the log that breaks existing code is a regression. So it's stable. You can parse it, you can feed it through things like Flume, Kafka, whatever, so you can feed it into other parts of your processing chain. Or you can just save it to a text file for post-mortem analysis. One very nice change that's coming in is caller context. Sometimes you've got problems. Say, okay, we've got heavy garbage collection count on the name node. That's great, you don't know why it's happening. With the audit log, you can say, okay, we're getting problems, we're getting too much load on our name node because some particular user, say the user, HBase, for example, is just really hitting hard the name node, it's creating directories, opening files, something like that. And you say, well, that's fine. We know that process is busy, but you still don't know why it's busy. What's actually happening? What is the root cause of the problem? So the caller context is trying to pass down all the way from the top level application, like an Uzi workflow is being kicked off, all the way down to access at the level of HDFS and other services right at the bottom, to let you try and work backwards to say what the problem is. Here I'm highlighting user A has created a file, caller context is test something with an attempt ID. That looks like a Yarn attempt ID there. We can go to, the other things are different caller contexts, if they're not problems, we can ignore them. The Yarn resource manager, again, it's collecting caller context. This is a separate log, but the idea is you can then tie things back to say, okay, this is the same context it was doing load on HDFS. All that stuff and other things we are feeding into the Yarn application timeline service, which is actually a service, a REST API that uses LevelDB and HDFS to collect the history of applications, of queries, things that are going on in the cluster, to then allow you either by hand or actually the software to actually do post-mortem analysis of what actually happened. By saving the level details along with the caller context, we can correlate what's been happening in the services with what actually happened in the query. It's a REST API, like I said. Your applications, they can publish it to the ATS via the same REST API. You can also, applications can also copy it. They write into a directory in HDFS where it gets picked up. The nice thing about doing the latter is we eliminate scale problems, we eliminate availability problems, so you can collect all this stuff. For reference, we are doing it in, certainly doing it in Hive and Tez. It comes and goes for some Spark, and the reason for that is actually partly my fault as I added it. And we're having jar version problems, which is always the pain. So it's not in Spark 2, it's in Spark 1.6 that we're shipping. It's the add-on library you can hack in. Anyway, here was us doing a caller context. We've gone some IDs to say, okay, here is some caller context up here that had a problem. It provides us more information saying, actually, we were called by a Hive query. Here's its path. And we also, description says, okay, what was causing problems here was a select user, select query, here is its values. We can then go one step up and say, okay, well, what was the root context? And goes, okay, Hive query, here's the root ID. Its context was Uzi. Description was, it was an ETL job. So if we can say, right, the reason our name node is being hit is because it was a select query that was coming from the ETL job, then you can start thinking, how do we fix this? What do we address? And you could look at it and say, okay, is there something more efficient that we can do with our select statement? Or if it is just a Uzi launched nightly job, could we just do it later? If it's interfering with other systems, let's just reschedule them and try and run them side by side. So caller context is really, really good. It is in Apache Cumulo, Apache HBase. It's actually down in Hadoop core at the IPC level. The RPC level, the caller context gets passed forward. My colleagues in Beijing, are actually adding it to Apache Spark as we speak. So again, you can go all the way down from problems at the top to trouble at the bottom. Another cutting edge feature, which is still, I'd say it's still stabilizing, so don't get overexcited about this, is Ambari Log Search. A lot of people put their hands up there noting that, yes, they've spent their time staring at logs across different machines. We all do that. And it's kind of like, why do we have to go to those different machines to stare at the logs? Why are we actually looking at text files, given that actually log4j is actually pushing out slightly structured format data? So we're trying to automate that, or at least make it easier to grep through the logs. So instead, we can capture the logs, we can copy them to HDFS, then we can start viewing them. This is actually working with Solr. So we're copying things into Solr. You can control what you want to see at the levels, like I want to see errors and warns. And then you can look for specific keywords and different time series. If anyone's worked with the OpenStack world, they have a standard platform for this, ELK, Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana. I think it would be nice to have something similar in this world for the Hadoop stack. Step one is we need to be generating a lot more logs that are machine parsable. So we developers, we need to move into that world of creating more metrics for machines to parse. We need to be sticking them out as logs for machines to parse as well. Anyway, it's up and coming. When it is machine parsable, we can do a bit more analysis here. Here is us doing a timeline view of the HBase audit, the HDFS audit log, seeing what's happening. It's saying, okay, pretty heavy load here. It's some Hive warehouse thing. This is one of our clusters internally. And it's the user HCube, whatever HCube is doing. So again, blame assignment. We're using machine audit logs to assign blame to people. If there's one thing I want people to take home today, is that problems on a large Hadoop cluster, they generate lots of data. That is a big data problem. Let's start playing at home with those big data tools. Let's not leave Zeppelin to the data scientists, okay? It's time for us engineers and ops people to start actually learning to understand ourselves, you know? We need to know that actually our HBase RPC count delay time is now more than 3 standard deviations off the normal, you know, foundational stats. So embrace the tooling. You know, it's a way to learn as we go along, and all the stuff is there for us to play with. I will give a product placement here to Apache Zeppelin. There have been talks on it. There might be some more later. It's interesting to play with. Again, it's still stabilizing, maturing. What's nice about it is you can plug in pretty much anything that generates tables and SVG content as output. That, we normally say, okay, it does Spark, it does Hive and things like that, but it actually does Bash as well. You can execute any jar that chucks out SVG. So you can actually have some good fun. This is one we've been evolving internally. It is not, I was trying to get a URL to share it and I don't have one yet. It's looking at the audit log of Yarn, saying what's going on. And it's saying, right, here's activity by user, here is activity by queue, here is activity over time, jobs by day. If we look at this user, we say Karam Singh is using most of it, then comes Hive, somewhere there is Rajesh in there. Rajesh, he was working with me on some performance stuff. Karam is very, very busy, which is interesting. If you go over here by time, about 6 in the morning, things start getting busy, get a bit quieter busy. That's probably Karam coming into work then, and that's when he's going home. So we're actually working out. We're inferring the lifestyle of one of my colleagues, where he comes in there, kicks off a Hive job, 10 o'clock, he's probably having a coffee. Then he sets off some more queries over lunch and comes back. So we're using big data to analyze the life of one of my colleagues here. But again, we can see what's happening, we can analyze it, so we're going from that machine-generated data to views here. What's nice here is because it's a notebook, one, it's shareable, two, it's not constrained as to what information we can do. If we put something into management tools, be it Embari, be it competitors, one like Cloudera, you end up saying, okay, I want this new feature, the engineers go and do it. When the next release comes out in a quarter or 6 months, they've got a slightly different bar chart. That's not going to fix your problem in a timely way, and it better be the right bar chart. Instead, we've got a notebook where you're doing queries against the collected data, so you can start saying, okay, let's look at this view of the system. Okay, let's look, Karam's causing problems. Let's do some other stuff and try and understand what he is up to. And it's just using the tools that we've got. So, notebooks are where things are going. Now, this is something that is in Apache Tez that's feeding into this. And it's a little analyzer that goes through the Tez audit logs and is finding out which of all the different parts of the DAG form the critical path. So I can go through the entire DAG of execution to say, here is where it started. There are lots of other things going on, but they start and finish. It's not relevant. But the entire series that actually held things up was a big mapper, a big reducer, and a final reducer at the end. So if you're looking at performance tuning, these are the ones to go for. Everything else is pretty much irrelevant because it won't speed up your query execution. Focus on them. This little analyzer here is actually a little jar you can call on the command line that chucks out the SVG. In Zeppelin, it's plugging in, you fill in the field, it executes the same jar and throws out the SVG for rendering. So that's where Zeppelin is a nice starting place for all this work, is we can plug in new programs, we chuck out SVG, and everything works, everything's renderable. Here we are using that same program to actually take more details on what happened in that same query, so we can actually start saying, give us a view what's happening. So this is a view where we had that mapper. Big long mapper, then a reducer overlapping, then the final output. Let's say, rather than look at the duration, let's actually look at the count here. The number of mappers for some transformation going down, number of reducers. Now, if you spent any time staring at stuff like this, you say, actually, this reducer worked really well. As soon as everything was ready for transformation, it came up immediately. So the cluster was idle enough, there was no time waiting for things to happen. If it had gradually come up like that, you'd say, the cluster is overloaded, I'm not getting any time, that's something to look at. And again, at the end, it goes down nice and fast. But you look at the mapper, and that's not good at all. It starts off there, it gradually trails down, makes its way at the end. And the way though things like map and reduce transforms work is the reduction can't really kick in until the map's finished. And that's taking a long time to finish. It means some of them, they've got their work right up there. Something else, way down here. That's the one to worry about. And you start looking at, okay, what's going on there? We would generally estimate at that point there are one of two problems. One, you would assume the machine, there are some machines that are broken. You try and say, okay, let's work out which particular machines those mappers are running on. Let's have a look at them. Were they overloaded? Or quite often it can be hard disk problems. If your disk is playing up and you're trying to read the data and it's retrying, that can cause problems. If it's your local disk that you're actually using for intermediate data, that's problematic too. So it's things that can fail a disk and network stacks usually. The other one is bad skew in your data sets. If you're basically saying, right, we're going to equally divide up our data among all the mappers, it could just be that one particular bit of that data set that's been partitioned, it just takes longer to compute. That's where you can turn on speculation to actually see whether it's a partitioning problem or it's actually a skew problem or whether it's actually a machine playing up. But if you come out and conclude, say, it's a skew problem, you're going to have to look at how can you do better partitioning. That's not so easy to work on, but at least you can have you know where to look. One other nice feature here that comes with Tez that is not yet in Zeppelin, I'll point out, it's actually using Python MATLAB to render, is the fact that Tez is recording all its network traffic, the start of a communication, the starting host, the destination host, timestamp for when it happened, the amount of data, and how long it took to transfer. So we can look at a cluster and say, is there any outlier here? This is the destination. Here is the source machine. Now, can anyone identify a significant outlier in this graph? Is there anything that looks suspicious on there? And the answer is it should be. There is something that's way, way above everything else. If these are the communications, something's up there. We can look down and say, yep, source machine 6, when it's talking to any other data machine, it's taking 30 seconds to communicate where everything else is taking a second. That is going to be something wrong with the networking stack on that machine. Rather than rush to fix it, the simplest solution is actually going to be just take that machine off the network. Turn off the resource manager, stop it serving queries, slowly decommission the HDFS data so it's on the other boxes. Then you can start looking at that machine when you're not in a rush. If a machine is being that slow, taking it out of the cluster is going to speed things up. It may seem weird saying, hey, we're taking a machine offline, but actually it's going to make your life better. The problem is identifying the machine. All right, anecdote here for entertainment. A previous company I was involved with was working on large-scale deployments of data mining hardware to military installations in the Middle East, where they were coming in special boxes, containers that were designed so you could actually get inside them with body armor and so that the snipers wouldn't shoot at the hard disks. And we're talking about this as Facebook, and Facebook guaranteed that they weren't going to deploy any of their data centers in those locations. And when they have problems, they just take the entire machine offline and they will spend time, they'll actually clean it out with the fans. Basically, it could just be it's clagged up with air, so it's overheating and having been shut down. And they basically do a full machine service in that situation. I'll go back just one second. So, this uses Python MATLAB. Again, it's in Tez. We've just noticed recently that Netflix have been pushing a library called Vegas for doing SVG rendering hooked straight up to Spark. To the extent that you can say, here's a Spark data frame with its column IDs and data source, feed it into Vegas and it will render that, even using the same column names, and that works well with Zeppelin. I think I would like to get someone else, obviously, to grab this and saying, can we actually do that same rendering that we're doing in MATLAB in Vegas, and so do it inside the notebook itself. So that is one of the things on the to-do list. What else can we do? We need to get that caller context everywhere. It's going into Spark right now, and once we've done that, we can start adding some more notebooks to actually do that analysis. More metrics for machines. The benefit of all this stuff comes from machine-collected metrics. Well, not machine-collected, machine-parsable metrics will be the summary, generating logs for the machines to look at. So We need to do that. We need to make sure that caller context goes all the way down. There is a very nice little feature coming in Hadoop 2.8 where we're going beyond, we're collecting a lot more statistics on the file system. Up till now, we were just saying, okay, well, here is the amount of big reads I did, here's the number of big writes I did, but that doesn't collect problems on really small reads, you know, low-level things that you may do a lot of that end up killing your performance. New interface, we're just collecting key values. So we can aggregate them. They're being collected on every machine. They get aggregated at the end of any query. They're just going to be grabbed and collected and pulled back so you can get a full summary later on of what was happening. It's in HDFS. I've been adding it for S3. We're agreeing on the same names to collect this stuff. And actually talking to Amazon S3, you have different problems. So we want to basically collect all those metrics. For example, if my query against S3 is slow, I can look at the stats and say it is slow because we were getting and then ignoring lots of errors trying to set up HTTP connections to S3. So we're collecting all that stuff. The other thing I want to work on is better use of these metrics in our own system testing. You know, we're collecting all these metrics. I should be using them a lot more when I do test runs, when I do system test runs. I want to analyze my own logs on a big test run to see why it's failing. So that is something I am starting to do by collecting metrics in the application that I can then use for my tests. I can add extra assertions on that internal state. I can then start chucking stuff out into audit logs and analyze it. I would really love for other people to work on this as well. My goal is that we get rid of JUnit reports, which I helped co-author in about 2000, and move to generating test runs in formats that actually we can parse in things like Zeppelin, that we can correlate with the logs. And instead of trying to analyze, you know, instead of trying to do system tests using test runners and JUnit reporting that we wrote for simple unit tests of objects, start looking at the problems of testing very large systems and the problems of analyzing while those tests are failing. So, big summary. It's a data science problem. Trying to debug what's happening in your Hadoop cluster, it's a big data problem. You've got lots of machines, they're generating lots of data. So let's move away from we're trying to do all this stuff by hand, we're looking at the logs by hand, we're trying to guess what's going on, trying things, and then hopefully hoping that they will go away just by tuning parameters and start saying, nope, it's methodical, it's data, we can use data science to analyze it, we can use notebooks, we can instrument our code, we can write better tooling, but we can really start treating the performance problems as things the machines should be looking at, rather than the people. And that is pretty much the end of my talk. In fact, it is. I will field some questions with the caveat that if you ask me hard questions about performance, I will say, ask Bikas or Hitesh, and I'll give you their email addresses so you can forward them straight on. All right. But otherwise, are there any questions that I may be able to answer? Silence. That's probably a good thing. Anyway, that's the key point. The stuff is there. Embrace Zeppelin. Embrace the audit logs, I think would be the summary, and let's work up that chain.